I remember as a young child, once asking my mom, "What age is it when men start being mean?" From my innocent perspective, it just seemed that every man I ever saw never smiled, cried, or seemed like they were enjoying their life at all. Any interaction I had with them was always short and unpleasant, and I left feeling sad or sometimes afraid that one day I would wake up and be just like them. Timothy McVeigh, the topic of our lesson today, was what my biggest fear for my adult life would be. A man who grew up in a rural town with his grandma as one of his only friends, who turned into a horribly rotten man and eventually hurt a lot of innocent people. He is responsible for the deadliest act of domestic terrorism in U.S. history. And today, we will learn all about his life, find out what inspired him, and hopefully learn something from him that we can use to better the world. Today, we will revamp his rotten into something more rhapsodic. Let's go. Magic mirror on the wall, who is the most rotten one of all? Hi, hello, and howdy, my darlings, and welcome to Rotten to the Core. I am the not so evil queen, Joshua Waters, and I'm thrilled to have you join my lessons. This is the history podcast where we use a magic mirror and a touch of humor to explore the lives and actions of some infamous figures from our past, all with the goal to learn valuable lessons from their mistakes that can help us in our current lives. Happy Easter, everyone. I know I am no longer a Christian, but I still love this holiday and a good Cadbury cream egg. I have learned more about its origins, the pagan holiday of renewal and rebirth. Honored in the early spring, it praised the pagan goddess of fertility. I have also spent more time reflecting out in nature, decorating my altar, and I chose a new baked good to try to attempt to make and satisfy my gluten craving. I was inspired for our lesson today when I looked up rotten things that happened during the spring. This time of year always makes me feel like a joyful, optimistic kid again, and I wanted to know, how could someone be in a season as magnificent as spring and do something horrible? How can you see all the baby animals, flowers that practically sing to you, and trees waking up from their winter slumber and be in a bad mood? Makes no sense to me. Timothy McVeigh was born in Lockport, New York on April 23, 1968. He had two sisters and was the only son of William McVeigh and Noreen Mildred Mickey Hill. His Catholic great-great-grandpa immigrated from Ireland to Niagara County, New York in 1866, and the family remained close to the area. He had a typical blue-collar childhood. His father spent most of his time working to support the family, and his mother traveled for work and, allegedly, to get down and dirty with other men. When Tim was around 10 years old, his parents split. His mom took his two sisters with her to live in Florida, and his dad kept him and raised him alone. We don't need to dial up Dr. Freud on the old Ouija to find out how traumatic that must have been to a young boy. Not only being abandoned by his mother, but also losing his sisters at the same time. I would have thrown the biggest of hissy fits if someone tried to separate my brother and me. Timothy's life will definitely reflect this early-on trauma later on. This is one of the reasons I advocate forgiveness to anyone who hurts us. Not because we are over it entirely, but because when we don't forgive and accept what they did, it can manifest in life-altering and sometimes deadly actions. Here Tim was, now in the prime of his childhood, trapped in a boring small town. Because all his dad did was work, he was pretty much just alone and bored all the time. Two very bad things for a smart young boy to be. It didn't help any that while at school, Tim claimed that he was relentlessly bullied and that the other kids would beat him up. They even called him Noodle because he was long and lanky. My name was Beanpole, but you don't see me blowing people up because of it. Well, what is a young, lonely boy to do when he has no friends? In walks his grandma, who seemed to be his only meaningful human connection for the remainder of his childhood. And one of the things they liked to do together was shoot guns. And guns quickly turned from a pleasant pastime with Granny into an obsession for Tim. Even as he grew older, he eventually became somewhat paranoid that the government would try to come and take his guns from him. I know I say this a lot on here, but good God, get better hobbies, people. You don't see me spouting conspiracies that Big Baking is coming to take my KitchenAid or knitting needles. And I even come from a family where guns were collected and passed down through the generations. My grandpa would buy all of the guns he could get his hands on. He saw them as protection and as an investment to sell during hard times, when no one would buy one of the horses. My childhood sounds like Little House on the Prairie when I say it all out loud. Tim would eventually start to express his desire to own a gun shop and occasionally would even bring firearms to school to show off to his classmates. Remember, this was the 80s. Apparently, back then, you could still sneak guns into school for show and tell. After graduating high school, he developed a strong interest in the Second Amendment and gun rights. He regularly read publications like Soldier of Fortune, a magazine reporting worldwide war reports. Another reason I have with the gun culture here in America. Are they just a man who likes guns, or are they mentally unhinged and plotting a massacre? Sometimes it's both, and we never know until it's too late. No wonder I have anxiety. Tim attempted to continue his education, attended Bryan and Stratton College for a short time before dropping out, when he began working as an armored car guard. I'll give you a hint what the gun-obsessed young Timothy was up to next. He joined the United States Army at the age of 20 in 1988 and used all of his spare time to read even more about guns, snipers, and explosives. I don't know who is doing these mental checks for the military, but I think some corners are being cut. Guns seem to be pretty much his entire personality. There were even a few times when Tim got in trouble with his commanding officers for some pretty serious infractions. Things like buying a white power shirt at a Ku Klux Klan rally. While in the military, Timmy met a man named Terry Nichols, his platoon guide, and one of his future conspirators. They quickly bonded over their love of all things that go bang, bang, and survivalism. Timmy was known as a top gunner and was eventually promoted to sergeant. He also earned a reputation for assigning the worst jobs to black service members and using racial slurs. I'll hold for the shock on that. He also earned some service awards like the Bronze Star Medal, Defense Service Medal, and the Army Service Ribbon while fighting in the Gulf War and Operation Desert Storm, for things like hitting an Iraqi tank from over 500 yards and decapitating an Iraqi soldier with cannon fire. The physical demands of military life eventually became too much for old Tim, and in 1991 he was honorably discharged after he told his superiors he was not physically ready to join the special forces. You know, the rules of warfare are astounding to me. I would never dream that there would be a world in which anyone would receive awards for decapitating someone. But here we are. I believe the rigid structure of the military was all that was holding Tim's fragile mind together, because once he left, things quickly went downhill. A trained killer with a known disdain for black people, distrust of the government, most likely severe untreated PTSD, and an obsession with guns? What could go wrong? Well, I'll tell ya. Tim moved in with his buddy Terry to Terry's brother's farm in Michigan and began telling his friends that he believed the army had implanted a microchip in his rear end so they could keep track of him. If only they did. As you can imagine, Timmy also had a hard time with the ladies. No matter what he did, he was always nervous and awkward around women, and they wanted nothing to do with him whatsoever. Cue back to our incel lesson a few months back. He became frustrated and mad about not being able to find a girlfriend, so he started gambling a lot and took out a cash advance. But he didn't win and couldn't pay back the money. He then wanted to move to a state with lower taxes and fewer government rules. But then he discovered that the government had paid him over $1,000 too much during his army time, and it made him incredibly mad when they asked him to give the money back. He even wrote a letter to the government that said, "Go ahead, take everything I own. Take my dignity. Feel good as you grow fat and rich at my expense, sucking my tax dollars and property." Talk about a drama queen. Sounds like something a teenager would say to their parents for taking away their phone.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
In 1993, Tim went to Waco, Texas during the Waco siege to show his support. There, he distributed pro-gun rights literature and bumper stickers bearing slogans such as, "When guns are outlawed, I will become an outlaw." A reporter there also spoke to him, and in the interview, Tim said, "I'm gonna summarize it based on how I assume it sounded.
They gonna take our guns and come and get us. This gonna be a socialist government and we have a right to defend ourselves."
Something we hear way too often here in the States. After he left Waco, Timmy began working at some gun shows. There he would pass out information pamphlets, admire all the boomsticks, and network with other patriots. He became a fixture on the gun show circuit. He traveled to 40 states and visited about 80 gun shows, finding that the further west, the more anti-government sentiment there was, until he got to what he called the People's Socialist Republic of California. One of Tim's inspirations and something he would sell at gun shows was a book called The Turner Diaries. Now, myself, I am not up to date with any white power literature, and The Turner Diaries is a fiction novel written by a neo-Nazi and white nationalist who wrote it depicting a violent revolution in the U.S. that leads to the overthrow of the government, a nuclear war, and a race war that leads with the genocide of all non-whites and Jews. I guess it never occurred to me that there were books like that in the world, and I find it more than damning that it seems like it's the people who wish to burn books that I would choose from a lineup to have read the Turner Diaries. In April 1993, Tim reconnected with his old buddy Terry Nichols and began learning how to make explosives. The Army really should have just put a microchip in his butt. He was absolutely up to no good. The Waco compound's destruction fueled Tim's desire to take action. He was growing restless as his paranoia and fear began taking even more of a hold on him as his anti-government hoopla became more fanatical. Timmy started making videos about the actions at Waco and handed out more literature, such as U.S. Government Initiates Open Warfare Against American People. He even started selling hats with bullet holes in them and began changing his answering machine greeting often to things like, "Give me liberty or give me death." Around the same time, Tim and Terry also began purchasing large quantities of ammonium nitrate and fertilizer to sell to survivalists due to rumors that the government would ban it. Oh, this part's so weird. He also wrote a 23-page letter to one of his few childhood friends to say farewell and proclaim his devotion to the Declaration of Independence. It's 23 pages. I won't read it all. But I will read the last few lines. "Steve, I have come to peace with myself, my God, and my cause. Blood will flow in the streets, Steve. Good versus evil. Free men versus socialist wannabe slaves. Pray, it is not your blood, my friend." What a loon! Can you imagine a guy you were friends with as a kid randomly sending you a 23-page letter that ends in that? Here I thought mine wanting me to join one of their pyramid schemes was bad. Good grief. Tim then began announcing that he had progressed from the propaganda phase to the action phase. He also began telling friends that he had plans to blow up a federal building. According to his biography, he decided he could make the loudest statement by bombing a federal building. Well, in April 1995, Tim was working at a campground and, with Terry's help, began building a bomb mounted to the back of a truck. On April 19, 1995, Timothy McVeigh drove the truck to the front of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building as it was opening for the day. He lit a 2-minute fuse. And at 9:02 a.m., a large explosion demolished the north hall of the building. In the explosion, 168 people perished, including 19 children who were in the daycare center. And along with the deaths, 684 other people were injured. To this day, it is the deadliest act of domestic terrorism here in the U.S. In interviews afterwards, Tim claimed that they didn't know there was a daycare in the building, but his accomplice Terry said that they did and just didn't care. About the victims, Tim had to say, "To these people in Oklahoma, you have lost a loved one. I'm sorry, but it happens every day. You're not the first mother to lose a kid or the first grandparent to lose a grandson or a granddaughter. It happens every day somewhere in the world. I'm not going to go into that courtroom, curl into a fetal ball, and cry just because the victims want me to do that." According to the Oklahoma City Memorial Institute for the Prevention of Terrorism, more than 300 buildings in the city were damaged. More than 12,000 volunteers and rescue workers participated in the rescue, recovery, and support operations following that bombing. Regarding theories that Tim had assistance from more people, he responded with a well-known line from the film A Few Good Men. "You can't handle the truth. Because the truth is, I blew up the Murrah building. Isn't it kind of scary that one man could wreak this kind of hell?" Tim was arrested shortly after the bombing when an officer pulled him over with no license plate. On August 10, 1995, Tim was indicted on 11 federal counts, including conspiracy to use a weapon of mass destruction, destruction with the use of explosives, and 8 counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of law enforcement officers. He was found guilty on all 11 counts on June 2, 1997. Only 8 counts of murder were brought against him for the federal agents who had died. Due to him being convicted and sentenced to death, the state decided not to file murder charges for the 160 other deaths. Timothy McVeigh was then sent to prison in Terre Haute, Indiana. You know, I never realized the number of prisons in Indiana until I started this podcast. I'm getting a better deadbolt. One of the victims who died in the bombing's brother was there the day Tim died, and he described Tim as having an expressionless blank stare. He looked defiant and said that if he could, he'd do it all over again. Then at 7:14 a.m. on June 11, 2001, Timothy McVeigh died by lethal injection for his deadly attack in Oklahoma. His ashes were given to his lawyer, who said, "The final destination of McVeigh's remains would remain privileged forever. I hope that means toilet." Afterwards, a psychiatrist concluded that Tim was a decent person who had allowed rage to build up inside him to the point that he had lashed out in one terrible, violent act. Whew. Where to begin with the lessons learned from Tim? I guess the obvious first choice is to find a healthy outlet for your rage so it doesn't burst out in horrible ways. That and not to live your life in fear. I believe all the people who view the world through the same lens as Tim did, hoarding guns, plotting government overthrows, and spewing hate to anyone who doesn't follow their exact mindset, are doing nothing but living in constant fear. The human mind is incredibly resilient, but fear will literally eat away at your mind if that's all it knows. Soon it'll cancel out reason and logic. Timothy McVeigh, Exhibit A. In my final lesson learned from Timothy, don't forget to get outside and touch grass sometime. And with that, it brings us to the end of our lesson today. Let's cleanse ourselves, and I'll let you be off on your next adventure. Take a deep breath and ground yourself in the here and now. May my mind, body, and spirit communicate clearly, allowing me to live in harmony with myself and those around me. Let any negative thoughts within me fade away, leaving only positivity and love. May I move forward with clarity and alignment with my highest self, allowing ease and flow to guide me toward my greatest desires. May I always remember that I am in constant connection and co-creation with Source. So be it. Thank you for supporting Rotten to the Core. Let's catch up again next week. In the meantime, be happy, find peace, and don't hurt anyone. I'd love to hear what you thought about Timothy McVeigh and what lessons you learned from our lesson on any of my socials. If you enjoy Rotten to the Core, please follow me on Instagram or join me on Patreon. Both of those are at It's Rotten to the Core. My TikTok, while it's still legal, is Rotten in History. And you can listen to me on my other podcast, Mystery Inc., that I do with my brother Shane and our good friend, producer Kim. We also have a Facebook group called Shane and Josh's Rabbit Hole, where we can interact and have a plethora of extra fun, foul, mysterious, rotten, and historical things a-brewing. It was lovely spending time with you today. Have a fantastic week, my darlings. Bye.